Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, welcome to yet more Rahalastapa. Tim Minchin's middle name is David. God, how I regret getting that wrong on the last Rahalastapa. This week, though, we are with the luminescent genius and wit, Sarah Pascoe, who reveals another terrible lying rumour about me that you are going to really fucking enjoy. It's not true. Funny, though. hope you'll enjoy that. Do keep supporting these podcasts if you can. Go faster, stripe.com/badges. Become a monthly badger. You get a ridiculous amount of extra stuff. It's crazy. Help us make more podcasts. All the money goes into just making more podcasts. It's just a win-win situation for you because you get loads of extra videos and stand-up shows and advance warning of the guests. Michael Palin and Adam and Joe show Rahalastapa's sold out before the news had even been made public to anyone else other than the Badgers. So think about that, my fine friends, sitting there on your couch. And also, you could go for stripe.com. You can buy books, emergency questions books, 3 books of 20 quid, very good value, and top Trump cards. It's lovely out there, I'm telling you. Come and see a Rahalastapa live. We're back at the Leicester Square Theatre in March, every Monday in March. And the first Monday in April, we're also in Birmingham and Norwich very soon. Many of these gigs have sold out, but there are still a few tickets for some of the London gigs. Come on, London. Why not come down? It's a great, great evenings of entertainment. One show. Just one podcast each time. You don't get two. So don't expect that. Just leave. If there's an interval run, I mean, if it's the first run, just leave, obviously, because there's only one. Oh, no, my email keeps doing that, doesn't it? That's just from Netflix as well. What a terrible... You've checked your email, haven't you? And it wasn't you, it was me. So, look, thanks for your support. There's a very good run of podcasts coming up, I know, because I was in them and I saw them. And I'm very much looking forward to getting back into the old seat and talk to Michael Palin on Monday. So check out if you're an O2 customer as well. I think there's still just about time to register interest to get priority tickets. Go to the priority app for James Acaster at the O2, the tiny room. It's the O2 with the Rahalastapa's arrived. Whoop, whoop, I'm raising the roof. That's what the cool kids do, right? That's what you do, right, you cool kids? Ugh.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I just had a little moment. I'm 52 years old. Please sit back. Relax, just get as relaxed as you can for this very funny and very interesting, as always.
I can't help you with iTunes on Apple Watch.
I didn't ask you to, you stupid fucking Siri twat. You've ruined my introduction. What are you going to say about that, Siri? You ruined it. Say sorry, Siri.
I'm not sure I understand.
Siri, say sorry for what you've done. Hey, Siri, apologise now.
I'm not sure I understand.
Yeah, very convenient for you. I'm glad. Anyway, sit back, relax, and enjoy. Rahalastapa with Sarah Pascoe. Is this number three? I think it's her third one. Hello, people. Welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who has been passing on his stone-clearing knowledge to the next generation. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Oh, thank you, London. It's so good to be back. So good to be back once again. Welcome to Richard Herring's Lay Mass Six Twatting Podcast in a week. I mean, 6 weeks. Is so, I was hanging around with the Oxford University Orienteering Society the other day, and I mentioned that because I was in Oxford. I did mention this in the Oxford podcast, but I was sat in Pret a Manger, his first term of a new term for some of the students there, and I was sat next to two boys who looked like they were 12 years old, who were talking about orienteering as if it was a thing that no one would have heard of, and just were so awkward. And I looked at them and thought, that is just me and my friend Mike Cosgrave. A terrible, terrible thing to realise why you never had sex until you were 20. And anyway, what those guys can't do with a compass isn't worth doing. That's what I'll tell you. And they call it Rahalastapa. So I don't know. Oh, it's catching a lot of cool kids. A lot of cool orienteering kids in today. The thing is, I'm doing so many podcasts because I'm on tour. Usually I have some time in between to have something happen to you. I did some 24 hours ago. All that's happened is I've come back from Oxford, gone to sleep, woken up and had to come and do this fucking shit. I had to go and do the... I said to my manager, have we got two in 2 days? What are you thinking? Why did I agree to that? And they put in loads of PR interviews this afternoon. I said, when am I going to ever research the shows? That's what's happened to me today. It's... it's very... Someone's going home. That's my life, that is. Me listening to this. I'm delighted. It's lovely. I've only got one more to go and then I can die. I've been out with my son. I took my son out onto my stone clearing field this week and we did a bit of stone clearing today. He's two. He was mainly falling over. But he did throw some stones, but he threw them further onto the field. He saw me throwing the stones off, but he threw them on further. So there's a lot... It's more difficult than it looks, is what I'm saying, stone clearing. Let's see who we've got in our audience today, because there's a gentleman here trying to avoid eye contact with me. What's your name, sir?
Russell,
that's a nice name. A man with a beard. There's two men with beards in the front row. It's nice. What do you do for a living, Russell? IT?
I work in IT.
Do you work in IT? Yeah. you're fairly chunky. How's it going for you, the IT? Is it good? Yeah, what's the best bit of IT you've done last month, would you say, in October 2019? Yeah, a bit of service, yeah, a lot of the guys, you know where you're coming from. But you seem to be here with a woman, so that's, are you with this lady?
It's
your wife. Yeah, it can happen, mate, that's the thing, it can happen, so that's, it can happen. Never give up. What's your name?
Claire.
Claire, that's a lovely name. Claire, what do you do for a living?
I work for a marketing.
You work for a marketing agency, which is sort of the female equivalent of being in IT, right? So that's okay, that's... I was going to say, how did you end up with this guy? So, you're very welcome. Thanks for coming. And that's a bloke from that's a woman there. So maybe think twice before you slag off my audience again. But thanks for the nice things you said about me. So my guest, you should hate The Spectator. I love them. I'm beginning to warm to their political views. Please welcome my guest this week. She's probably best known. You'll recognise her. She was an audience member in the Keith Barrett show. I'm guessing
like she was an actor pretending to be someone in the audience. Oh, that is a really weird thing to put on IMDb.
It's Sarah Basco, ladies and gentlemen. We'll find out. Sarah Basco.
Welcome. Hello, sit down, there's a microphone.
Hello. It's my pleasure. This is your third time as well.
It is. Is Tim three as well?
Yeah, three.
Yeah, we looked at each other in the crossover in the dressing room. Like, okay.
Yeah, that okay. Over the last week that took. That was a week. Sarah was very keen. She's been here for a week just psyching herself up for the bigger.
You spent $50,000 getting buying your own program back.
Yeah.
How much did you get paid to do it in the first place? Was it less than that or more than that?
Probably about that between the two of us.
But in the 90s.
Oh, no, actually, we did two series, so we probably got about that each for doing the two series.
Two series, and then you spent it all on buying it back.
Yeah.
And how much to go till you've broken even?
Well, I mean, if I'm going to be honest...
Please. It's an honest podcast that I'm hosting.
I think it probably made about $200,000.
Well, you've from selling them?
Yeah.
And you and Stu pretend to be so like, oh, just getting by. Okay. Understand.
I think that's right. Chris Evans can fact check. They did pretty well.
No, that's brilliant.
Because we actually, because the other versions was, this is something that people at home didn't see, of course. The other version was like the luxury sets with 5 discs, so we were selling them for 25 quid a pop.
Lovely.
So we made the money back. What was the audience member in the Keith Barrett show?
Oh, I was a genuine audience member.
Oh, you? Okay.
So after university, me and my best friend Cariad, we met at university and we were both desperate to be actors. And because we were desperate to be actors, we were very poor. I lived with Cariad and her mum in their house after university. And so to go out, and some of you may know this as well, it's free to go to TV programmes. You just have to get there at 6 o'clock and queue up. So we went to see QI. We've now both been on QI. I'm not saying that it's magic. If you go to a TV programme, then 8 years you get to be on it. But in my experience, 50% of the shows I went to watch in the audience I've now been on.
A lot of these guys will be on this, to be fair. I'm running out.
Yeah. And so the Keith Barrett show, we went to watch, and he's amazing, Rob Brydon, and you'll know this, but he does amazing impressions and things. And so rather than having a warm-up come back on and doing audience chat, he comes and does it, and he does, like, A Man in a Well, and he does a really good Hugh Grant and that kind of stuff. And he also does lots of audience participation. And he made fun of me because he asked me my name, and I said Sarah, and he asked me my surname, and I didn't want to tell him. And so he made up a story where I was on the run. Okay. I hadn't paid my tax.
Okay.
Which is probably why it's on my IMDb. So that's a career highlight.
That's good.
I've never told Rob Brydon.
No.
I've done What I Lie to You a few times, and my lie has never been, I came to watch you on the Keith Barrett show.
So do you think someone's put that on who recognised you from the...
I assumed you'd done it.
No.
So you, so you had an intro.
No, well, I would have done if I'd known.
Do you think Rob Brydon did it?
It might be Rob Brydon.
I recognise her from somewhere.
There's lots I want to talk to you about.
Well, that's good then.
Yeah.
That's going to make this a bit easier.
Yeah, it's good. Let's first of all...
Why have you got your hand on your face?
You know, it's just... I'm just trying to prop myself up.
It's self-soothing.
It's just human contact.
Oh, yeah. Is it, though?
Scarcely. Let's talk about you. I don't think we've talked about you being on Pointless Celebrities and House of Games. And I'm very interested in those things.
Oh, yeah.
How did you get on Pointless Celebrities?
So I've done it 3 times.
Yeah, I've done it 3 times.
You've done it 3 times. Tim Minchin's been on the show 3 times. I've been on it 3 times.
Yeah.
It's not a competition. Progressively worse is how I've done.
Oh, really?
The first time I did it with Josh Widdicombe.
Yeah.
Josh Widdicombe, the brain. Josh Widdicombe is a very funny person. You know that already. He has an exceptional memory. He remembers everything, even when it's off his tits. Somehow, it's just so many brain cells. And the first Pointless, we not only got the trophy through to the final, we won.
Wow.
Because Josh Widdicombe remembered reading an article with Will Self.
Okay.
He remembered an article and he got the author's rights, which is fine. Then the next 2 times, I can't remember who was with, and both times were bad.
Yeah. It's really very much about who you're with. That's what I've discovered when I've been on.
So what's your times?
I was out first round with Rona Cameron.
Did you know each other already?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
You said yeah, like...
I mean, a little bit, but not
we weren't friends. Did you ever text each other?
No.
Okay, you don't know each other.
Okay.
Like, so you knew who each other were.
Yeah.
You got paired by the programme.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
They pair you and then you pretend to like each other.
Every time I've been... Oh, no. Well, every time the programme's paired me. The second time was Robert Webb.
Yep.
They'd spot to the second round. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Have you ever texted each other?
No.
Okay, so... Again. Okay, so...
And the third time, I texted this person.
Yes, with Katie.
It's my wife.
Yes.
I've done more than text her.
Okay, this isn't a bragging competition.
I've had sex with her, is what I was saying.
Yeah, and you haven't had sex with Rona Cameron or Robert Webb.
Not yet, but...
We now know.
Not yet. But after the show, if we'd won, I would have done.
So how did you and Katie do?
We got through to the penultimate round.
So you got the
got
trophy?
Knocked out by two, no.
Oh.
Got knocked out by 2 points by...
So you still don't have a pointless trophy?
Citizen Smith.
Will he do it a fourth time? Or are they obeying?
Yeah, I was meant to go a fourth time with Michael Sheen. This one's just gone out.
He loves games.
Yeah,
he loves games so much.
Asked for me. He was on my podcast.
God bless him.
I came back from holiday to do my podcast with Michael Sheen.
Yeah.
He asked for me to be on Pointless with him. It was on. I came back on the Monday, and then I was going back on holiday. It was on the Wednesday that it was recorded, and I decided I couldn't let my family down by staying in London for two nights rather than one night. So I came back to the holiday. My stupid fucking family. Michael Sheen went on to win and get that.
Who was the second?
He got Steve Pemberton, who was very clever.
So he's got you and then Steve Pemberton.
Yeah, so it was me first.
You first, yeah. Yeah. So Michael Sheen, it's so weird that he's in comedy circles now.
Yeah.
Because he was at the McCuntleth Festival.
That's right.
And I know Michael Sheen as in the famous Hollywood actor, an incredible actor, but he was at McCuntleth, which is just comedians drinking very warm beer, like worrying about their work in progress shows to 30 people. And I was introduced to him, and it was like, hello, Sarah, here's the actor Michael Sheen. And he was like, oh, I know you, you've been on The Chase. Because then he was just like talking about how much he loves games.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, you could just go on Pointless. Like, they were just... And
we're
that's
both
so amazing,
obsessed. We're both obsessed with game shows. I was going to talk about it on your book. Which there was a bit that made me think about the reason I like game shows so much, which I have discussed on here before. Mm. In the 80s and 90s, there was no pornography, and I know you talk about that a lot in your book. And so when I was quite a young man, I mean, I would say just about a man, but still a boy, I used to masturbate to the attractive women on Going for Gold. And now, having read your book, I go, oh, is this why... I like game shows so much. That is it. But, am I sexually excited by game shows, or am I hoping people are going to masturbate
game
shows?
You just have positive memories.
Yeah.
Your body just emits certain neurotransmitters of this is nice.
Oh, it's nice being here on
and
this
And nothing
show.
Will ever shock me about what men masturbate to, or women, actually. I'm not. What people will masturbate to is incredible.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Well, that is incredible, but it also says something about the time in that there was very little available to masturbate to in those days.
But it's a good thing to remember about pornography, that when we all panic that it's crazy, it's like people were always wanking. They were just having to be very creative about what they wanked. All we've done is made it slightly simpler. Yeah.
You always had to shut your eyes when Henry Kelly came on.
Oh, I don't know the show Going for Gold.
No, oh, man.
I was imagining, like, the Gladiator, but with gold bikinis.
No, it was very much people standing behind... But every now and again, it was a European quiz. It was very Romaine. It was.
Okay.
I think Hans Zimmer wrote the theme music to it. I might be wrong. I nearly said that when Tim Minchin was here, who wrote his music for his film. It was people from all over Europe and Henry Kelly. You know Henry Kelly?
No.
Oh, so young.
No one does.
From going for, from Game for a Laugh.
Going for Golf.
Game for Golf.
From the thing I'm talking about. No, I don't know who this is.
Oh, you're so young.
No, I'm not. I just, we weren't allowed to watch TV as children.
Okay.
So,
but it was just basically a buzzer game show with people behind and Europeans, and I was, it was exciting to see some European ladies. That was, that was enough.
And so everyone was dressed.
Yeah, everyone was fully clothed.
And they were just buzzing.
Yeah.
And answering questions.
Yeah. And if they were,
can I ask a question that's personal?
Yeah.
How long from starting to wank to ending, culmination of experience, does it take? How long is this program? And how is it like a question and answer? Or was it like 15 minutes?
It was a 30-minute program.
Yeah, but how long is your wank?
I mean, I think it was prolonged. I think sometimes it would not reach completion because it was, you know, there was seven, there was three people. Was there three or four
so
people
I've got
playing?
Some more questions.
Yeah.
So would you put it on going, I need a wank, I'll watch Going for Gold? Or when it was on, did you go, oh, sometimes I can wank to this. I'll see if today's one of the days.
I think more than that. I think I like the game.
Okay,
I like the game
you would
show.
Watch it anyway.
Yeah, I'd watch it anyway, but if there was a pretty European lady, sometimes a British woman was attractive enough, but not very often. they sometimes had sexy ladies on it.
Yeah.
You know, just and I find intelligence sexy too, but they also have to be pretty in that instance.
Yeah, that's
so
interesting,
it was,
isn't
you know,
it?
Yeah. But it's sort of charming what you could masturbate to as a teenager.
Yeah.
When there was no, I mean, I'm sort of glad. I'm glad I didn't see hardcore pornography as a child and teenager myself.
Yeah.
And I didn't, like you, I didn't see pornography really until I was in my 20s before I saw a proper hardcore porn.
But I think that's the thing about us worrying about on other people's behalf.
Yeah.
It's because we think something terrible will have happened to us when actually it's exactly the same body having the same reactions to like arousal. You got aroused from someone on a quiz.
Yeah.
Whereas there's a, there's a teenager going, yeah, for me it was just a naked woman. Like there isn't any necessarily there isn't, we project a lot of harm.
Yes,
it
no.
Sometimes.
Well, what your book is is, I mean, there's a lot to talk about your book. Your book is called Sex, Power, Money.
Yeah.
And I've been listening to the audio book as I do, so I've had you read the book to me, which is extremely generous of you. I mean, it's for me, it's very much my wheelhouse because it's about evolution, which I'm obsessed with, and it's about genitalia, which I'm obsessed with, and it's about pornography, which I'm interested in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Academically, and that's, it's a very academic look at it. And, you know, I think it's interesting because you have challenged some of your own preconceptions. You've started out, and I think that's true, you know, sort of the old school version of pornography for feminism was, it was a bad thing, it was influencing kids in a
yeah,
negative
but
way.
But there was also this, I mean, because I can understand where it came from, because feminists wanted to exist in a world where what they looked like wasn't relevant, that they were treated as sexless beings in terms of judged on their ability or what they said at meetings and their ideas, and they kept coming up against situations that meant that they were never invisible and just their ideas or just what they were talking about. And, of course, the easiest thing to blame was, well, the sexualization of women. And so it then became this binary where they were then blaming people who made... They thought that sexuality would just stop. Like, oh, if no one can see boobs anywhere, people will forget we've got them. I think was the thinking.
Yeah, they were wrong because, you know, my Going for Gold experience proves that.
Exactly that.
I would still manage to find women attractive if they never took their clothes off and just answered questions asked by Henry Kelly. It's quite a specific kink. Well, all that's very interesting. I think what's amazing about your book for me, and we, I think both this and your last book would occasionally cross over in subject matter with my book, Talking Pop.
Yes, which I have read, so I'm not stealing from you.
No,
you gave it to me when I was on this podcast.
I did, and you know, I think you'd find these things. I'm sure you found them out in other places anyway, as I did. But there was a piece of a theory about penises that had never occurred to me, and I'd never...
Which theory was that?
The idea, it's essentially the idea that the penis is mushroom-shaped at the top.
Oh, yeah, the glands.
As a...
Sperm removal device.
Well, yes, like a chimney sweep brush to take out other men's sperm, but it was a chimney...
You don't need to say it's so sexy.
Yeah, which is...
But you can put it in scientific terms.
But it's also like a chimney sweep brush that then ejaculates soot into the chimney after it's cleared all the other soot out.
That's a wonderful analogy.
Thank you.
So, yeah, it's as if a chimney sweep wants only his soot in your chimney. Yeah. So he gets all of the other soot out first. Yeah. What I find, the thing I find fascinating about it as a theory is there's two things. Obviously, there's penis shape. So our penis isn't shaped like the other apes, which is smooth. We have a glands, and studies have been done in prosthetic vaginas with prosthetic penises, testing the kind of the diameter, what the glands needs to be like to kind of scoop out liquid that's already in there. But it's also that, and also the fact that we have sex for so long, because the whole thing with thrusting, especially, it's really related to jealousy. Like, people who suspect their partner may have been cheating or know that their partner is sleeping with other people thrust for much longer than someone who kind of goes, well, she was in the living room all day in her pyjamas. they're very lazy. If they're thrusting. There's a lot of things that can be kind of... it's really, really interesting.
Well, it's all about sperm competition. I think we talked last time. Yeah. I know we did one of the times about the kamikaze sperm that are there to knock out other men's sperm rival sperm in the, that might be...
Which is also a very... And I didn't understand that until writing this book and speaking more to people whose area of science this is. It's a very, very proven area of science, kamikaze sperm.
Right.
So it's the most exciting area because it sounds like, oh my God, this is the thing, and especially because how it's talked about in things like Sex at Dawn is like, oh my God, female sexuality is so strong and so powerful, but it's never ever been replicated. And in science, that means it's not true.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And boring.
Well, and this is just a theory as well. There's lots of things.
It exists in other species, I should say. Kamikaze sperm is a thing. It's just that it's not been replicated with humans.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. But the idea that men, because you say that the penis go, you know, the fact that men have to have a period of relaxation in between intercourse,
refractory
is so
period.
That they won't take out their own sperm.
Yes, it's why the erection you lose tumescence straight away, because otherwise, even just coming like withdrawing from the woman, you're going to take out all of your own ejaculate or a lot of it.
You've got to be careful for that.
Yeah.
You want those boys to stay in there.
Yeah, but... or sometimes, no. Yeah. You don't, and we should have used a condom.
Yeah. So. But the thing I'd argue about that is, like, especially as a young man, there's not that much time between the penis going down and it coming back up again.
It depends on the man, you know.
Right.
It really does depend on the man. It's a fascinating thing, because there are, even with young men... Such a difference. It is a scientific experiment, because I'm always the same woman. I've got the same moves.
Yeah.
So it's not like, oh, sometimes I'm sexier, sometimes I'm not, in different relationships. And there are genuinely men that you can't touch it 3 hours after because it tickles too much.
Yeah.
They're like, oh! And then there's men who, like, 25 seconds later can just go.
Yeah. Yeah, very much. very much. 30 years ago, that was very much the case.
Yeah.
I mean, now I've got there's a whole scaffolding. Takes about 2 weeks. I've got to get written permission.
I was talking to another comedian. Yeah. He's slightly older than you. And we were talking about the viropause, which is the equivalent of the menopause, but we don't talk about it as much socially. So it's not as well known a term. And it's when men's testosterone kind of... drastically lessens, and he was saying he's still waiting for it to happen because he's still got like the raging horn all of the time and still looking at women all the time, just going like, when will I become a normal human?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's still there a little, you know, there's still a little bit there.
Okay.
But, you know, it's definitely not what it was.
Okay.
It's definitely not what it was. But I think if a man can say 10 minutes later is ready to go, then this idea that you'd be getting your own sperm out 10 minutes later.
But he's going to be putting more in there, presumably.
Yeah. You've got to just be the last guy in. You've just got to wait until everyone else is falling asleep.
10 minutes, the sperm will have moved out of the way.
Right.
It would have gone... The sperm that
so
is
what you're saying,
in that
then,
direction.
Is that's a system that gets any sperm out there that was put in there in the last... 8 minutes.
No, it's swimming in the wrong direction. The idea is not to ejaculate and then take all a big bulk of it out immediately with you.
Yeah.
So what was the point of it? You're creating it, making. I'm not defending the penis, by the way. I'm just saying with this theory, the idea is that if you instantly shrink, reverse your way out, you're going to leave more in there. And if you do have sex with the same person 10 minutes later, you're putting more in, and they're really good swimmers, they're already off.
Yeah, okay.
They're up there.
Okay.
Do you want to hear a
I've sometimes, you know, had sex with someone and some stuff's come out.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, so I don't know what that was, you know, and I had a girlfriend who was definitely cheating on me.
Yeah.
And I remember having sex with her and something came out.
When
with,
you say that, it
penis.
Sounds like you're talking about a piano. When you say some stuff, you mean some other goop?
Yeah, some goop came out, but it could, there's goop up there, isn't there? There's other goop other than goop.
Oh, there's a whole
there's a lot
load,
of goop
there's
up
a
there.
Variety of goops.
But it could have been... Could have been someone else's goop.
I think, what better time to call her? just you guys be quiet. You pretend you're not here. It'll be like, surprise, surprise.
It's all right. We managed to work out she'd definitely been cheating on me. It was fine. So either way, I'm kind of hoping it was just goop. I was hoping it was her goop rather than, you know.
I'd say...
Yeah.
Don't spend too much time thinking about
it. No, I've thought about it now.
Yeah. So why... Okay, so about her cheating on you, it feels like you're still hurt about it.
No, no, I'm just hurt about the idea of someone else, another man's spunk on my cock without my permission. I wouldn't mind it if, you know, she said, like, we're going to put another guy's spunk on your cock. I'd have gone, oh, well, all right.
So you think that...
We'll give that a go.
So, okay,
but
so
it's just that, in a way,
this is
without
interesting.
My permission.
So in terms of consent,
yeah.
You think... If someone else's DNA is on your dick,
yeah.
You should be forewarned and give permission.
Yeah, I think that would be nice.
On behalf of womankind, we can't promise.
Okay.
And menkind, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
I always presume everyone's heterosexual because that's what heterosexual people do. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I mean, that's.
I wasn't apologising to you.
I know. I was. I'm talking on behalf of of gay men.
Yeah.
Who would have really liked the bit.
I didn't realise you were the spokesperson for gay men.
They all got together and said, Rich, will you talk to us? Because we're a bit shy about it all. And I said, that's fine. I've probably had another man spunk on my cock, so I know what you guys are going through.
There we go, that's made it better.
Oh, dear.
I heard a sexual rumour about you.
Oh, God, what?
So this is what I was thinking behind the curtain. I was listening to the beginning. I remembered that before I started stand-up, I would have just started, I heard a sexual rumour about you.
Okay, go on.
Because there are rumours that go round. I'm not asking you to tell me if it's true or false.
I'm just telling you that I heard it.
Don't
suppose how horrible it is.
So, because it's before you met Katie, or before you were in a relationship, I was told... Don't have sex with Richard Herring. He likes to throw money in your face. And also, the rumour was...
I have a rebuttal here?
The rumour was not notes. Change.
So that's why you wouldn't have sex with me. That's not true. I can promise that. Every single rumor I've heard about myself, and there's plenty of things that I've done that I should be ashamed of, and I'm not. And I would tell you if I'd like that.
Yeah.
But I told you about the going for gold thing, right? That's so I'm very open.
Yeah,
I'm very honest.
Very open, yeah.
I've never thrown money in anyone's face.
I wouldn't have brought it up if I thought it was a thing. I haven't thought about it in such a long time. And it's just so... Stand-up comedy is like school, like when no one ever grows up. And that is... It's just what happens, isn't it?
But it's sort of astonishing that... You know, what I find interesting is the way that... Because the other genuine that I've talked about in As It Occurs to Me... was someone said, what I've heard that you like to do is you get women back to your hotel room and then you sit in a high-backed armchair and make them dance while you masturbate. And, you know, if I've ever got a woman back to the hotel, that's not what I'm not going to waste my time making them dance around.
But that's...
I'd make them answer the quiz question. Okay. I was going to do it. That was what I wanted to do, but...
It's so weirdly specific about the height of the armchair.
Yeah.
Like, that's your thing.
Yeah.
Like...
So, Wait, and I've heard that same thing about... It's actually about... I'm going to assume it's untrue of the other person, yeah. Which was Jim... I've heard that of Jim Bowen. It doesn't matter, he's dead. It's Jim Bowen. He probably did it. But Jim... There used to, that used to be not, a rumour about Jim Jones. So there's these kind
but
of...
But that's
tale.
Not that bad.
No, it's not that bad, but I would say... Again, I would say...
If someone wants to dance for you, I think that's completely fine. I don't
but they
think
didn't.
Even
I never did it.
No. I'm not saying for you. I'm saying
then
for
I threw
anyone.
Money in their face.
I'm saying for anyone, like asking someone to dance for you, if that's arousing, it's not. If it's a consensual, that's not. Yeah. That's not a bad thing. I'm not going to say this next thing. It's another rumor about another person, and okay. It involves. If I don't name the person, yeah. It's fine. It's the other. There was another person, and the rumor going around about them was space docking. Now, I don't think anyone does space docking, but it's. I think the fun, like I mean, it's like school, but it's describing to someone, and they go like, so and so, they're into space docking.
Right.
And then you have to describe it.
Yeah. Which I presume is two penises.
No.
Okay.
It's when you do a poo.
Okay.
Into a condom.
Okay.
You freeze it and you use it as a dildo. And the rumour was that this guy had a mini fridge. That he took round with him on tour. to freeze his...
It would have to be a mini freezer as well.
I knew when I said fridge.
I mean, I'm not. It wasn't me.
I know.
I didn't think about the logistics of it.
I knew when I said fridge that it was wrong, but sometimes those mini fridges have one layer on top so that you can just...
I mean, what you'd have to do is carry, like, a freezer bag around with you with ice in it, and then you could just put that... I mean, I'm just...
Yeah, I don't think... I don't think it's a thing. I think it's a very childish... glee that we have about that kind of information, or thinking that we have that information about people, and it is gleeful. Like, we all know stuff isn't true, and the minute someone tells us that, I believe it.
I bet there's so, and especially about comedians, there's so much stuff that is true that you could say about comedians.
Yeah. And also, what's amazing is then they talk about it on stage. Like when Joel Dommett got caught masturbating, you'll know this. But Joel, this is not a secret. Joel Dommett was caught in a really horrible, horrific way where someone tricked him with his computer and videoed him masturbating and then wanted a lot of money from him to release it. And you just think that's the worst thing that could happen to anyone. People kill themselves over that kind of thing because of the shame and the humiliation and the fear. And then Joel turns it into the funniest Edinburgh show he will ever do.
Yeah.
And then you've got no gossip. You can't gossip about him if it's like...
No.
Yeah.
But that's always, you know, my philosophy has always been about... Well, I can't help being honest about stuff as we've experienced.
But that's why we're
this.
Comedians, because we don't have that shame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of everything I've done. And I'm very proud of things I haven't done that people have said I've done. Throwing coins in women's face. Thanks, darling. Were they allowed to keep the money afterwards,
no,
or did I go...
No, also, no, you're getting it wrong. The idea wasn't thanks. It was like, ugh, that's all you deserve. Have 40p.
It'd be nice if people, you know, did that for you after you'd had sex, so you knew how well you'd done. I'd welcome that, and that's a good system, because that goes up to infinity, really, doesn't it, money? So if it's 30p, you go, OK, I've got to try harder next time. Ooh, £500. Thank you very much.
You know there is a career where that literally is.
I might go for it.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah! What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So, I'm thinking, well, because the book's about evolution as well, the thing that interested me, you talk about the men, sort of catcalling men and men going, cheer up, love, it might never happen, and
oh,
that
yeah.
sort of stuff. But, you know, those annoying men that do that in the street, wolf whistle at women in the street, and it never seems to work as an
yeah.
idea.
Well, there's two.
What makes them, if things evolve because they have a success rate, even if it's a tiny success rate, do you think that ever worked? Do you think those guys, they go, cheer up, love, it might never happen, and once in a million times the woman goes, oh, thanks, I'll suck you off then.
I think, with those kind of... let's call them vocalizations.
Yeah.
There's a lots of different reasons that someone might choose to do them. And sometimes it's about ownership of space, like making someone feel uncomfortable. And this would happen if you were wearing, I'm trying to find a male example, stereotypical. Say you were, this is what it's like sometimes being a woman. It's like wearing a Liverpool football top and you're walking through... Everton? The city of Everton. with your Liverpool. What you have is an awareness of I'm not supposed to be here. Me being here makes me I'm slightly more visible than I would like to be. It doesn't mean that every single person who passes you by wants to fight. But if there are certain signals that people can give that make you feel that, and you might just be a woman at a bus stop. You might be a woman on her way out, so... You already have this awareness of like, well, I'm dressed up to look nice. And then when something happens, I blame myself. There are all these things that happen. And I think because we don't have enough communication, especially with young men, I think a lot of men don't realise that what they're doing is unwanted. Mm. So when I was a teenager, and I loved to read, and I always had books, and always, always, when I had a book, a man would come over and ask me what I was reading, which is... You're never, ever opening a book because you want to talk to someone, especially like a stranger, a strange man who's approached you. And then this thing, and I would have this, I just saw Hannah Gadsby's show last night. She has this thing about being a puffer fish, where your rage just goes, and it's kind of that, but you have this contained thing because you're polite and you're nice and you shouldn't have to be, but you also don't want to give a fucking book review to a stranger at a bus stop when the whole point is this is my private time, but there's a visibility. So I think it's something I've always found fascinating. And also as an ageing woman, what's fascinating is people talk about how it changes when your fertility decreases, which is absolutely true.
Yeah.
I had so much more interaction with men I didn't know in my teens and 20s, and it happens very rarely now.
Right.
Which isn't to... I don't miss it anyway. It's not a sign. It's an interesting observation that when I was younger and much more scared, public transport was very difficult.
Of course,
and it wasn't a beauty thing. It was never me going, oh, my God, I'm so fit. It's like, oh, and I'm just a girl on her own, which means sometimes it just felt like being a moth to other people. And I don't think they... I wouldn't use the word predatory. Some of them thought they were being friendly.
But you think maybe psychologically it is just about... That the power. Oh, so they. I think they. You know, it's like when someone, as a guy, and so someone will email me and go, "Oh, I've worked out where you live because of something you've said in this tweet, or you know, something you've said in this blog, and I know exactly where you live now. I'm just warning you in case anyone else. That means someone else can find that out.
Yeah.
You kind of go, that's as weird as just being the person who.
Yeah.
You're just the person who's worked out where I live in quite a difficult way and managed to find out where I live as a result.
I know, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you go, what is the thought process that makes you go, I want to see if I can find out where he lives?
Yeah.
I can.
And so, and they know
which means that someone who's weird, they could also find out.
And by telling you, I don't even mind them trying it out, but by telling you, they're giving you a little...
I know where you live. They're just basically, I know where you live. So it's a little
threat.
They're
also they're asking for gratitude. So then that they're the hero. Like, thank you so much for warning me, person who knows my postcode.
Yeah. So it's you do get it as a man, but not in any way the same level. And I think it is, and you know, it's sort of subconscious, I think, sometimes with the person doing it. But I think there is there's an element of power there or trying to...
My thing with it is, and it's something that I realise now at 38, which I didn't realise at 16, which is that all of the time that I was very resentful about men approaching me, I hadn't ever considered the fact that our culture keeps telling men, if you want to meet women, go up to them.
Yeah.
Because I blamed them. I felt like I was giving off. Like, leave me alone. I'm not interested. I don't care about you. I'm not here to meet anyone. I'm here with my friends. Always. Never wanted to go, oh, who's this? I've never wanted to know. So I felt that was really clear. But if we keep saying to guys, hey, just go up, have a funny line, have a joke ready, offer to buy them a drink. That's what was unfair, is I didn't realise we were saying to men that's the only way to meet people.
Yeah. Well, that's the book's interesting in that because you are trying to think of it from both points of view.
I'm trying to teach myself now, yeah.
And I know the original idea for this book was to be look at men a bit more than this book is, right?
When I was writing my first book, which was about the female body, I had kind of loosely pitched the idea of just doing a book called Manimal, which was the second one. I would just do the male body and how it's treated in culture. And then as I started writing it, it became clear that wasn't what it was going to be.
Yeah.
Especially because I don't have a male body, and I realised that was very unqualified. So it had to be a perspective removed. Yeah,
yeah. But I just sort of think. I mean, I'm sure we've probably talked about this before, but it's. I've been through that teenage period and that period where I mean I was always too nervous to go and talk to her, and that was equally frustrating. I mean, I didn't, as much as women didn't want to talk to them, I wouldn't go and talk to them because I found that too embarrassing and weird.
Yeah.
But just if the minimal amount of education for men, for boys and girls, really, at that stage, if just someone had said, it's not, you don't have to, you don't have to trick someone to go out, you don't have to impress them that much to go out with them, you just have to be quite a nice person, not a dick.
I think that's the thing, I think there should be an empathy exercise, and it's not because I think there's any binary between genders, but if during teenage years there was such a to and fro about sexuality, not as a precious thing that anyone is the gatekeeper of, but just in terms of every individual learning that... you can be so turned on you can't sleep. That happens to you. And I remember listening to Take That on my Walkman and being like, it's so fucking fizzy. That was I don't know what to do. Like, I can't masturbate enough. Yeah. like, this is never going to stop. And so... So in terms of an empathy exercise, I can understand any other young person having that and thinking you're never going to have an outlet for it.
Yeah.
And it's just that sometimes it's been framed in unhelpful ways. For lots of young women, it's framed in a way of this is your worth, hold on to it. When someone has earned it, if they like you enough, here are some hurdles. You make women gatekeepers in lots of ways. And for boys... especially where I grew up, there was this whole thing about getting people drunk.
Yeah.
Just get them drunk enough. Or and this is why the book's about money as well, spending money, taking women out, proving yourself to them in that way. It's all very unhealthy. And it's got nothing to do with pleasure.
No. Well, there's the chapter about that, about whether men should have to pay for dinner on a first date and whether that's a normal thing and what the reasoning behind that is. I mean, is it an evolutionary thing of it's the providing? There is a correlation, isn't there?
You can apply evolutionary arguments to lots of things that we still have, which I find really helpful.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, we argue things from a very head up perspective. We go, oh, it's all the magazines and the fashion industry, and nothing changes. I think it is based on it's very nice to be treated well. And that's not a gendered thing, but someone treats you nicely. We have some hardwired ideas about the ways that we treat each other well. Men proposing in heterosexual couples is another thing.
Yeah.
You just think, it's stupid. It's so stupid. There's so much pressure on straight men to, create a fuss and do it well. And it's based on this really ugly thing, which is you're asking if you can own her. you're asking her dad for permission, like, can I have it now? And then asking her, like, do you want to change your surname? it's really gross.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of the DNA thing I think is interesting. I mean, obviously, like, we're controlled by our genes and there's this...
But we're not controlled by our genes.
Yeah. But it sort of feels, you know, it sort of feels like... I know this isn't scientific, but it sort of feels in a way we're trying to pass on our genes to the next generation.
Oh, yeah, we are doing... Yeah.
And so therefore, the idea of those genes are controlling us. But actually, it's not... doesn't necessarily make you happy. So that whole idea of, you know, having to... men having to feel they're the parent of a child, like the genetic parent of a child.
Yeah.
And that whole... the jealousy and everything that comes out of
yes.
that. Yes. It's not actually about your own individual happiness. Your genes are not that actually important to you.
This is why the most interesting arguments are about, I think, human beings as kind of robots for bacteria, because deeper than genetics, you have the fact that we are, all of us, ecosystems, and those bacteria, when they change, can drastically change our behaviour. It's been proved most in mental health, in terms of what's going on in your gut, changing what you do. I mean, free will is a concept. Did Tim talk about this?
No.
So I met Tim Minchin, where would I have met him? 9 years ago at an awards ceremony. And he told me free will wasn't a thing.
Right.
And I was like, yes, it is. It absolutely is. I was like, no, when you do that, you devalue all of our choices all of the time. And he was like, you have to read this book. And it was like a pamphlet by a guy called Sam Willis. And then I read it and I've never seen him again. And I forgot to tell him. I know what you mean now. There's no free will. It's not a thing. Like, I mean, there's a very well-constructed argument that all of us are just... there's so many things influencing us that every time you think you're making a choice, that's just the equals, that's the result of all of these pressures.
Yeah. I mean, but we there is an intelligence we have beyond that, right?
Not according to Tim.
Well, as opposed to... we can at least discuss it, we can at least work it out. But I think we can rise above the animal within us at least a little bit.
But the animal within us is one thing, in terms definitely in terms of like mating and genes, but then you have all of the things that affect you because of the things that have happened in your life, and then you have the bacteria.
But and also you have the bacteria of, you know, religion and guilt that invades your mind, really, you know, so that you're made to feel guilty about perfectly natural things. You're talking about in the book about you know, Roman Catholic priests not being able to being allowed to masturbate, but they still do masturbate because you have to masturbate.
You have to.
So you know, and even when I was a kid. All, and I'm sure still now, but there was it was like that was like, oh no, you know, if you masturbate, they genuinely were told you'd go mad.
I was researching male masturbation for one of the chapters, and in the Bible, Jesus says, and one of his friends, Mark, separately, they both say, just don't think about it. Just don't think about sexy stuff. And like, having been in a human body, like, that is not good advice.
No.
Like, the more you try not to think, that's how you make people obsessed with the thing. That's how you create compulsion. The guilt element with our sexuality, and that's where it does become very out of control, like with other addictions, that's a twofold thing. The worse you feel about it, the only point you're released from that guilt is when you're doing it, and then it all loads on again, and that's a horrible cycle.
But they know it gets you going, though, doesn't it? So that's the thing with Jesus. He knew how to...
Yeah.
It makes it more exciting when you're guilty,
doesn't
it?
I heard he wanked a guy and forgot. That's what I heard.
That could be. Let's talk a little bit about... the book's great, and there's a podcast as well where you go into more detail about...
Well, what I wanted to do, because I was writing about some topics I'm very naive about, and the one thing I wanted to do was give a platform to people who have experience. So, for instance, with stripping or sex work or working in sex activism, quite often as comics we can get very in love with the sound of our own voice and talking on other people's behalf. Like, oh, I've read about this and now I understand it. And one of the things I had to do alongside it really early on, I realised I can't talk on any... because I have no experience. All of my stuff is... ideas and kind of filtering it, so that's what the podcast was.
I mean, it's sort of, I mean, I have to say, you're still doing stuff, you know, these books are, they are funny as well, but they're properly researched and they're proper, you know, a good look at these complicated subjects. And it's sort of weird in a way that, I mean, a lot of stand-ups end up doing this sort of thing. Mm. I think because we do obsess about subjects and then you want to get to the heart of it.
And also we have our daytimes. I honestly think we're the most, like, in terms of, like, being time-rich. Like, you, I was listening to you before I came on talking about having 2 days in a row of work.
You don't know how hard this is.
Because, but we forget, like, that everyone works every day. And that is honestly the biggest, the greatest fortune and privilege of comics is that we have so much time.
Yeah.
We do have so much time.
Yeah, and you haven't got kids. But you're still doing stand-up. Yeah. And the stand-up... And I'm glad to see you were talking about safe spaces and how that's not really... I mean, it's not that possible in comedy. Comedy's not a place for safe spaces, which is, I think, a good thing to hear someone saying. Because I think comedy's still got to be a place where ideas can be explored.
It's two things. You can't have... So, I mean, in true comedy, and you know this because you're at a live gig, but comedy, stand-up comedy only works when you're in the room, really.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't really... There are some amazing Netflix specials. This isn't me dissing anyone. There's amazing Netflix specials. There are some people who have had incredible sets on Live at the Apollo, but it doesn't... It's so much better. You have to be there, mm-hmm. really. And the two things, that, for me, are no advertising and, there's no censorship.
Yeah.
And then the audience decides who they want to see and who they don't.
Sure.
I went to see Hannah Gadsby last night. I went to see... when the podcast goes out, be 7 months ago. Hannah Gadsby's show, Douglas, by then will be on Netflix, so you could watch it. It is... for me, it was so joyous because every target she has a routine about being misdiagnosed by a male doctor, which is so sublime. And I realise I'm enjoying this so much because it's similar to an experience I've had. It's because I understand that thing of trying to explain to a man what's happening in your body and him saying you should go on the pill, like, rather than us look into your mental well-being. And I realised that and this is what I thought on the way home, and I felt so happy, I'd laughed so much, I felt a little bit lightheaded, and I thought, oh, some people will get this about Jim Davidson. But they will, because for them, it will be their Hannah Gadsby, they go, that is the person who speaks for me, that is the person who puts the thing that I can't articulate that well so brilliantly, that I'm so happy that finally someone is saying it, or I hadn't even realised that, and that's what I think as well. And I say this as an unoppressed person, which is where maybe I'm wrong, but essentially, maybe I'm just wrong then. That's so shit, because I can't just say, like, maybe we can all have someone we love, but you can't if one of those people is racist. So I'm wrong. I realised while I was saying it, I'm wrong. I was trying to find a positive in Jim Davis.
Yeah, but it's... You could like his, the bits that aren't racist.
Yeah, that's it, though, yeah. But I think most comics feel that, and I think most audiences understand that... People walk out when they hate what you're doing, and it doesn't have to be offensive or in any way dodgy, they will just stand up and go, this is terrible! What you're doing is so bad! And they will just tell you.
Yeah.
So we don't need a, like, regulation.
No.
Also, everyone's definition of punching down and punching up is completely different.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't ever find, like, we've all agreed.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But I think the reason so many comedians go into trying to grapple with a massive subject that you're talking about in this book, which, you know, you're never going to get the definitive answer on whether sex workers what the lowdown on that is, or whether porn's a positive or negative thing.
Yeah.
You're never going to get the answer that will satisfy everybody, but it's interesting to discuss it. And that's what comedy is, a safe place, in a way, to say, we're all going to discuss stuff, and I'm going to say some stuff that's stupid, and I'm going to say some stuff that's nonsense, I'm going to say some stuff that might be true, and we'll work out between us what we all think about it.
I think positing ideas in stand-up, but for me, writing books has come out of the realisation that you can't just bring up everything in a stand-up scenario, because it is self-indulgent, because the other people who've come because it's comedy will go... What the fuck is this? Like, I've got a babysitter. This costs £20. And this is just you working out what you think. Do we have free will? I don't know. Like you do. There is an element of the deal is be entertaining, and if what you're doing is more interesting than entertaining, put it in a book.
Yeah. Or a podcast. Or a podcast is equally good. A podcast is good. But your lads was you did it. Have you recorded the show at the Palladium? Mm-hmm. Is that out?
Yeah.
So I've seen some clips online. I saw it in Edinburgh because you did a show. You did my theatre the same space as me.
Yeah.
You came and did an extra show in there, didn't you, that couple of years ago. It's a great show. It's really, and it was about your boyfriend, your previous boyfriend, and he was doing a show.
Yeah.
About you as well, that Edinburgh.
Yes, yeah.
So that was... Did you see his show?
I haven't ever seen his show. Seen.
Has he seen your show?
No.
Okay.
Which makes it sound like we're terrible enemies.
Yeah.
Which we're not. So, yeah, it's interesting with John. So John did a show. I mean, he didn't just do a show. He won what was called the Perrier.
Yeah.
But he won it at the same time as Hannah Gadsby. So that's been an interesting trajectory for them both.
Yeah. Do you think that them choosing his show instead of yours proves that he was right in the relationship and you were right?
I think if all relationships could have a group of 11 to 12 of their peers just come in and judge who's funniest, wouldn't it be made much easier? Now, do you know what? I actually think in terms of how... It's really horrible breaking up with someone. It's really horrible. That is a universal experience. Deciding you want to be free or don't feel about somebody the way that they deserve is horrible. And it creeps up on you and you know you have to do it. And if then 10 months later, fucking like, ew, Fastos, 10 grand in the bank, you're like, I was so good. I was so good for leaving them when I did. What a gift I gave him for the rest of his career. So if you are in a relationship you are unhappy with, you leave that bastard, okay?
And you were celibate for like a year?
I didn't have sex for a year, yeah. Intentionally.
Yeah, I mean, I've done...
It wasn't just an accident. I tried to construct a show. But yeah. So the point of the show that I did, Lads, 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 was that since I was 18, I had been in a relationship up to splitting up with John.
Yeah.
And had not had any gaps because I am... I'm not a cheater. I'm just a... meeting someone new and then breaking up of the old relationship. I overlapped for a long time, which is very unhealthy because you take all of the stuff from the last relationship into the next one, all that kind of stuff. So that's, we needed a break.
Yeah. So that is a good idea. I think, yeah. I, again, I've been celibate for a year, but not, not through my own choice. And I think when I've broken up with someone, I think I've never gone straight into another relationship.
Never have.
I don't think I ever have. Yeah. Not with anyone significant.
The trouble is, it's just so distracting because the beginning of the relationship is the most exciting, overwhelmingly obsessive time. So you don't ever have to deal with the past.
Sure.
So especially like if I had relationships where I moved out of a house and I didn't take anything with me. Like I left everything, all of my furniture, my saucepans, my duvet. But I was so like, that's what happened before John. And then I was so overwhelmed by how I felt about him. I just like went, the past didn't happen. Yeah. I did need to process it a little bit.
So with that year, were you processing all the relationships previously? Or
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I think it's so hard to be intimate.
Yeah, it isn't. It's
do you
really
not think?
Easy.
I mean, what I would do,
I'd split up with someone and then I'd fuck a load of people.
Yeah.
That was how I got over relationships.
No, I don't mean the getting over. I think the actual relationship bit. Yeah. I think actually, and I don't mean like trust or control. I mean actually just, I've got a dog, right? It's 10 months old, this puppy. And the relationship we have, I go, oh, that's intimacy for the first time. Like, oh, what he does... When I get in the bath, he comes in and he puts his little paws up on the bath and I feed him the bath water because he likes to drink the warm water. And I go, well, that's intimacy, isn't it? No boyfriend has ever run in. and gone, what does your bath water taste like, Sarah? And that's why it's never been enough for me. I need that level of obsession.
Yeah. Never date comedians, but you are doing again, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I am as well, I suppose.
I don't think never date comedians. No. Well, one thing I would say to people who are here, who if you fancy a comedian or you meet them after a gig, be wary. be wary of comedians.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I adore them. I might have said this when I was here with you last time, but Roisin Conaty, who's the wisest woman in the world and the most brilliant person, and she once said, comedian isn't a job, it's a species.
Yeah.
And for me, that's true. There's something about the way that comics are processing the world in this constant state of kind of making stuff and responding to things.
Yeah, and I think that it's also true in the way we recognise each other. I mean, like dogs, we recognise each other even if we look different.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, different species of dogs don't look like each other, but they,
but they
still
know
they're
not
their
cats.
Dogs.
They know that. They yeah, know no, you're absolutely dogs. Right, yeah.
And, like, I think with nearly any comedian, even if I haven't seen them for 10 years, if I've known them once, you just sit down and you're back into wherever you were.
Mm.
And there's an understanding, I think, just of where we're all at, you know.
Yeah.
There is weirdly quite a lot of respect, I think, between... I know comedians have that.
Oh, there absolutely is, because there's no safety. I honestly think there's nothing to push back against. We go, that's solid.
Yeah.
With comedy.
Yeah.
There's nothing where you go, well, I've done that now. So there's no ladder. There's nothing is ever built. It's all just like push it. And it goes, oh. You go, no, but I wrote a book. Like, it doesn't matter, you were shit tonight. Like it's gone. Like, it's there's nothing solid.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think you're right. Let's ask some emergency questions and then go home.
Okay.
I'm feeling...
Don't make it sound like it was like, ugh. Be like, let's ask some emergency questions. Then go
it's
home.
It's been amazing. Who is it? It has been amazing. Who is the most famous person you have been in a lift with that you didn't get in the lift with, but you discovered in the lift?
Oh, Daniel Radcliffe.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad that one person at the back was like, whoa.
And he just
went up in my estimation.
He just appeared in the lift while you were in the lift and he was going up.
It was actually adorable because there was an agent was having their agency party at the top of the Ivy.
Oh, yes.
And also at the top of the Ivy is a smoking area, so anyone can be in the lift. And so what there was some, let's call them staff at BBC Radio, in the lift going up to the agency party, and one of the women was very drunk, and I had not noticed Daniel Radcliffe. She started going, and bear in mind, this is a lift, so it's this as big as this table. If it isn't a podcast, it's as big as a small table. Or a lift. And
some people at home won't have been in a lift.
They'll be living in their bungalows going. So the very drunk woman started going, Harry Potter. Harry Potter's in here. Harry Potter's in the lift, like this, and little Daniel Radcliffe just went, hello everybody, my name's Daniel, and then he just shook everyone's hands. Aww. In the lift. I know, it was such a beautiful, generous way to deal with that situation.
Yeah.
Hello, and then he shook everyone's hand.
Yeah. What a weird life he's had, Daniel Radcliffe. He must be very difficult. He seems a very...
well-adjusted. Like,
he does seem well-adjusted.
I think if you go through that kind of child star thing, it's a stupid opinion, I think he's a very good actor,
yeah,
which makes it easier. Like, he was a child actor, but I think that he's made incredible decisions since, hasn't he?
And that's why the Weasley twins, their lives have fallen apart.
I know, I don't want to say that about children. I honestly, it must...
No, it's not when they're children. When they were adults, they were shit still. Yeah, they were... Like, the kids weren't that good to begin with, and they got better.
Mm.
The Weasley twins, if anything, got worse as they became...
I don't know. What else have they been in? What are you talking about?
I'm just talking about Harry Potter. They were adults by the end of Harry Potter.
Were they?
Well, I think so.
I think they were still technically children. And okay. I don't think we should be mean.
Then I retract everything
I
retract said.
I just think it's so hard. It must be... If you're
but
a
I'm
parent,
still putting it out.
If you're a parent whose kid wants to do stuff like that, it must be so difficult where you go, this is what an amazing opportunity. They want to live their dream. But then you have to have the rest of your life afterwards. And you know what it's like. With a slight bit of public attention, the world is full of bullies. Yes. And for children, it just must be awful.
Yeah.
Don't be mean about the Weasley twins.
I just one of them shit, the other one's all right. I'm not going to tell you which one's which, so they can both feel happy in themselves. I was the good one.
Okay, yeah.
I think one of them's gone on to do some stuff. They both went to Hollywood, and I think one of them got a job without the other one.
Okay.
So he's the whichever one is, that's the good one.
Okay. So have you been in a lift with a famous person?
I was a few. I was Jeremy Paxman when I was first in the BBC.
Yeah.
Billy Connolly. I'm sure I've said this on the podcast before, but I was on a one floor, was in Montreal. And there was a lift to the hotel from the car park to the hotel, and then you got in, and there was another lift to your rooms. I had a horrible time in Montreal. You must have done Montreal.
Yeah, horrible time.
I really hated it. But, I've been three times. I've hated it every time. And I had a really particularly bad time the last time I went. And I'd done this awful gig where all the other comedians, the American comedians, just basically do racist, sexist humour, and they'd been.
Yeah.
But it's all like the Korean people go, I'm Korean, so my parents are all like Benny Hill.
Which is weird.
Yeah. Benny Hill being doing a Chinese person. Yeah. And then a woman did, you know what our guys are like? They're all cheating, they're all fucking around, and they're all awful, aren't they? But we still love them, don't we still? And I felt so offended.
Yeah.
That she was stereotyping men in that way and then letting them off as well.
Mm.
That I kind of walked back from this gig really thinking, I hate this place and I don't know why I'm here. And I got in a lift and Billy Connolly happened to be in that lift.
Oh.
And he did like a 10-second routine about being in a lift. He didn't know any, you know, just there was four other people and then he just went, oh, that's what it's about. You know, I'll do an impression of him. Oi! Hello! It's me, Billy Connolly! What's this with a lift just going one floor? What's that? He just did a brilliant bit of observational comedy.
Yeah.
That was the best thing I saw in Montreal that year.
Oh, that's a brilliant story.
And it completely, I think it might be in my book, How Not to Grow Up. It completely sort of turned the whole experience around. Yeah. It was just magical.
He's such an incredibly special, important comic, isn't he, Billy Connolly? But not just for people who do comedy, but for audiences as well. Like, I think he's so many people's favourite comedian.
Yeah. Well, I think he's the best.
Yeah.
He's the best stand-up. I think he's the best UK stand-up.
And it's that thing where sometimes when people are alive, you don't appreciate them properly in their lifetime. Like, if we'd all been born 20 years ago... 20 years ago? No, that wouldn't work. Some of you will have been born 20 years ago. If we were all born in 20 years' time, we would just grow up in that kind of way of going, oh, he'll just be the name of the person. You go, well, that person invented a form.
Yeah. It's true. It's true. So that is the answer to that question. It's been lovely having you on again.
Hey, it's lovely to, lovely
you're
to
always
be here.
A fantastic guest. What's coming up, bearing in mind that this might be about April 2020?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Do you think we've Brexited yet? In April 2020?
You can't ask me to predict that.
I can.
Because you can't... It's anyone who says they know is talking shit.
Yeah.
Like, for me to go, like, I think what's going to happen... I don't know.
No.
You don't know. None of us know. None of them know.
The people listening know.
You don't know.
The people listening
at
know.
Home because they're
they
in the
know
future.
Whether we've left or not.
What's happened?
Unless I think a solution might be just to do one of the things and not tell anyone what it is.
Yeah.
And then just everyone's left in the dark.
Or maybe that's what's already happened. Maybe we're still in.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. They're just going to keep going,
changing
dates, and not realise, and then we'll all just die.
Yeah. Eventually, people will forget about it if we leave it long enough.
Oh, they won't. They won't. My sister's diabetic, and we tried to get her insulin from America just in case. And you still have to have a prescription. So you buy it from America, you get someone else to do it, but you still need a prescription. And the text she sent back to the WhatsApp group was, "Lol, I voted leave, I'll deal with the consequences." She ain't forgetting.
So, anything coming up?
Yes, I've got a. I'm about to start filming a sitcom on BBC Two, which will be out next year. So, this will be a good time to mention that to people listening. Yeah.
Good.
And the paperback of the book will be out in April or March or something.
And
so,
it's a terrific book, as is the first book as well, Animal. So, thank you very much for coming on.
Hey,
do go and see Sarah do a fantastic stand-up as well. Ladies and gentlemen, Sarah Pascoe! You shabby! You have been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Sarah Pascoe. Thank you, as always, to Pest.
You're no pest to me. I love you guys. I think you're doing a good job. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. Thank you to everyone at GoFaster Stripe and the British Comedy Guide and Acast. You guys rock my world. I'm telling you, thanks to the camera guys and even George, the incompetent sound guy. I would very much like to thank my producer, Ben Walker, to whom I'm indebted, the executive producer this week. What a character he was, Joe DeCambre. You know that fella, yeah. He always has a feather in his hat, crazy. Joe DeCambre, that's what we call him. It's his name, it's just polite. This, thanks for executive producing. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. You've been lovely. Now go to richchang.com/gigs and buy tickets to one of the remaining shows that isn't sold out. I love you. You know it. Take care. Yeah, no, you go. You hang up. No, you hang up. Come on. Oh, you hang up. You.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. richardherring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.